Welcome, Bankless Nation, to the Bankless Weekly Rollup, where we cover everything that's been going on in the wild west of crypto. Today, I'm joined once again by the one and only Ryan Sean Adams. Ryan, welcome back to Bankless.
Oh my God, what did I miss? Did I miss anything?
You missed
what
nothing,
happened?
Dude. Nothing happened. Okay, don't worry about it.
Okay, so my big question going to this episode, I was like trying to figure out after coming back. So for people who don't know, I've been on hiatus for 90.
I don't know how they don't know, but for 90 days
I've been out. Okay, so my big question coming back to this episode and just like getting back into crypto, because I've been on a complete disconnect from almost everything.
Internet detox.
Yeah, and I could talk more about that. But my big question, David, is like, okay, are we still in a bull market? Like, what is going on here? Because there's some, I just don't even know. This has broken the cycle in my mind. So, like, what's the consensus around around crypto?
I don't think that there is consensus. And I think that is actually a very big signal about what crypto is now. Dispersion, differentiation. There's different sectors of crypto. Crypto's large. There's different corners and there is no global consensus. There is no one single thing about what crypto is. And I think, in my opinion, is that the four-year cycle is broken. And so are we in a bull market? Or are we in a bear market? Well, you can look in different sectors of crypto and have different answers to that. There is no one clear answer.
Okay, so like traditionally when we say bull market or bear market, we're talking about those four-year cycles, as you said. Now it seems like the consensus is sounds like it's your opinion. You share this.
It's my opinion,
Is it broadly the consensus in crypto that, okay, we don't get those anymore. There's no four-year cycles. We're at the adoption curve where just like stuff just happens. It's like the regular market in that way. And we're not going to have a repeat of like Bitcoin goes up, you know, like all the alts kind of go up and, you know, it's either a bull cycle or bear market and we just get that.
I don't know if it's consensus, but I think that is right.
All right.
Because it's hard to have consensus when there is dispersion. Like people's voices are all over the place.
All right. Well, it's interesting.
It's a phase change of crypto. There has been a phase change. I will say that.
There's a lot more I want to get caught up with you about because I think I missed a whole bunch of things. So I hope, would you just indulge me a little bit in this episode? I hope Bankless listeners indulge me. It's like, give me some highlights from the last 90 days as we get into this and like get me up to speed because I feel like there's some major things I may have missed. I wasn't in the action at those times.
Yeah. And maybe it's also worth providing the context about like how, like, I'm sure you heard about the Trump meme coin.
Yeah.
But like, you have been on a media content detox. And so it's worth, I think, laying down the impression of, no, Ryan has been unplugged. Maybe you could share, how unplugged have you been?
Very. So I like the Trump meme coin, right? That's something I would have like heard probably within seconds. I caught wind of that a week later from an in real life friend, a week after it launched. And he asked my opinion on it because he like knows I'm in crypto. What's your opinion? I was like, oh, that happened? Okay. Like, you're just shooting from the hip on an opinion on that, but I do have an opinion on that, actually. But, like, that's how disconnected I was.
Right. The president 7 days late to the Trump meme coin is incredibly disconnected.
Yeah, that's my latency right now. So, there's a few things you're going to have to get me up to speed on. Also, like, some things as I'm getting plugged back in on the week, there's some Zora drama, these content coins. Yeah. Bitcoin is decoupling. Like gold is on a tear. That's all interesting. And also Vitalik had a execution layer plan for the EVM. He's talking about maybe replacing the EVM with risk zero. So definitely want to talk about that with you too.
Yeah, that's definitely the tip of the chain. So we're going to go through, I have the four biggest things that happened in the last 90 days, and we're going to go through those.
All right.
And then we'll also get to the tip of the chain, which is like some of the events that you just talked about. Before Bankless Nation, we get to all of those things. A message from our friends and sponsors over at Wallet Connect has been used by over 255 million connections from 40 million unique users all across the internet who are simply just connecting their wallet to the applications that they want to use. And Wallet Connect is entering their final form of decentralizing and protocolizing Wallet Connect. And of course, in order to do that, they are releasing the last piece of the puzzle, the Wallet Connect token. Ryan, if you're familiar with like You know the story of Visa or Swift messaging networks and how they came to be and how like it's not they weren't like startup companies. How would you explain the creation of those two things?
Visa was like a consortium, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of all of these different kind of like financial payment providers and banks and all of these things. And so they're almost like a collection, a consortium that sort of came together and they coordinated this consensus layer and they sort of like just formed that way.
Exactly. Okay, so that is exactly what's happening to the Wallet Connect infrastructure, which I thought was pretty compelling. I had a conversation with Pedro Gomez that's available on Twitter, so we can link that. That's exactly what's happening to the Wallet Connect token and how the Wallet Connect token and infrastructure is being spun out. So if that has you peaked, Bankless Nation, bankless.cc/Wallet Connect to stay ahead of what's next. I think the first news of the week is this article, Ryan, that you posted called How a Ruby Reboot Fixed My Burnout and Upgraded My Mind. This is also your welcome back post to Twitter. So welcome back to Twitter.
Yeah.
Sorry to have you back on that particular medium of the internet. But again, like go and like lay us down on the last like 90 days of Ryan Sean Adams and what you've been thinking about and why you needed to take the break and what it feels like to be back.
Yeah. So I guess like firstly, in the welcome back to Twitter, like I'm going to do things differently this time, I think, with respect to how I engage with an app like Twitter. And I can kind of get into that. But I just posted that it's a sort of a short post. And I think it might resonate with people. It's like nothing to do with crypto. Well, it kind of is, actually. But it is to do with like life and modern living, I would say. And doing, I think it's a post for what I called like grind addicted overachievers, which was like, I think, I don't know, you tell me, David, we've worked together for like 5 years now. It's like, that feels like my personality type. Like I can get in these grind cycles of just like, I do the same thing and I can like, bear the pain to like, just get through it. And then I also have this problem in that, like the thing that I'm doing, I'm not quite satisfied. Mm-hmm. Like I get to the place, I'm like, oh, but there's another place further out. And like,
There's always a higher peak for me.
Yeah. And so all of this compounding over time in January, I would say it like kind of snuck up on me, but like I kind of knew it was happening. But I just hit a moment in January. It was after, do you remember our, like our, the one AICC Solana token I go drama, like, yeah. And it was
the one time AICC. You touched Solana.
Yeah. and there was a whole like public pitchforking, actually we did sort of make a mistake on that, but the pitchforking was absolutely crazy. And this was like the, I don't know, the 10th time it had happened. And all of this combined, I didn't have the skin thick enough to get through it. And something in my mental operating system just crashed. Like I just felt done. I felt exhausted. I felt burnt out. It was this question of like, I wake up in the morning, why am I doing this? Like, why am I doing this? And I think if you're listening and you're asking yourself that question about whatever you're doing in life, whether it's like a relationship, a job, like just anything in life, and there's this repeated question of like, why am I still doing this in your mind? Then that might be a sign you're like in burnout territory. You've lost track of yourself and you need to do what I did, which was take a reboot. So, this was really hard for me, David, because like, and you were the first person I talked to about it, but it was really hard for me to come to the realization that I needed to completely disconnect from everything, like kill all my commitments, like all the we plan podcasts like, 6 weeks out, right? Mm-hmm. Cancel all of those, at least for me. Have you, my business partner, like take on the mantle of like carrying all of the load of Bankless where I did nothing for 90 days, like no meetings, no work, nothing. All opportunities that were like things we could do, possibilities, just let those evaporate. That was the reboot. And that was the decision I had to make to come to you, talk to the team and just be like, hey, I'm going for like 90 days. And by the way, I can't tell you confidently if I'm going to be back or not. All right. And I wish I could say that was like, I rationally came to that conclusion, like this is all part of, a process of just like upgrading and just like figuring my shit out. But it wasn't like that. It was like capitulation, it was like, I compared it to being margin called, liquidated. Yeah, you know, like it wasn't on my terms.
You called it an emotional margin call.
It was an emotional margin call. And I think that that can happen. If you're a, you know, grinding a high achiever, that sort of thing can happen to you. It's better. I would just say it's better for it to happen on your own terms and not be margin called. But regardless, I was margin called. I needed to kind of disconnect and go figure stuff out. Go answer my question of like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, I think it's worth emphasizing that there was a moment, and it lasted for a while, actually, maybe even a couple months, where you did not know if you were going to come back to crypto.
Yeah, to crypto, to like to Bankless. I just like, I really didn't know. And so I set this time aside for myself to go figure it out. And like once I disconnected, once I cleared everything, I really had just the space to diagnose what was wrong. Right. And so this is where like you reboot and you upgrade, right? This is the cycle. And I think for my cycle, you know, life happens in these cycles of progress. Right. And what I needed to do, I didn't know I needed to do it, but what I needed to do was sort of like end one cycle in order to begin the next. And that's what the reboot did. But now the question is like, what's the next cycle for me? And there were a few problems I had with the way I was doing things previously in like crypto, media, investing, this crazy world. Like one was just, and some of this is pretty simple. It's like not, it's not rocket science, but you know, like that's the beauty of it. Anyone can kind of do these things and apply them. But for me, number one, I was way too online. I couldn't go 15 minutes without checking something. Dude, so whether it was like socials, whether it's like price chart, whether it's Discord, whether it's Telegram, it was dopamine dripped right into like my veins. And I didn't even realize it. I think you've told me before when you've gone on like mountain expeditions and stuff, like when you completely disconnect from screens, you realize how addicted you actually like were to it. And so like I would find myself just kind of like when I disconnected from these things, like I'm talking deleting apps, everything, like just complete cold turkey. I would find myself like reaching for my phone. I'd reach for my phone, dude. I pick it up and I look at my like home screen. There's like nothing fun on it anymore. And I'd be like, I put it down. I'd be like, why did I even do that?
Why did I pick up my phone? Yeah.
Yeah. Why did I pick up my phone? So that was clearly a problem. I got rid of that by just treating myself like a child. So I went into the, you know, settings of my phone, app screen restrictions, screen time limitations, again, like deleting things. And it totally, it felt like detoxing from something.
How long was that process? Like, were you irritable? How long did that last? Like, what did that feel
like? The first week, I felt like jittery. I mean, it wasn't super irritable, but I felt jittery. Like, a little bit like trying to get off caffeine. And this only like hard substance. I've lived a pretty clean life, David. So it's been, you know, social media and caffeine for me.
Are your vices?
It's pretty, it was kind of like that, but it took like a week and I got the first round of just like clarity, just quiet in the mind. And then after 30 days, like a lot more of that started to return. And I found like I could focus. I could be present. I combined some of this with like, you know, just like some daily, just quiet time, like meditation type stuff. And I could think again. So that was the first thing I did. The second thing I did was I felt lost. Like I felt like I didn't, again, answering that question of like, why am I doing this again? You know, like the reason you and I both got into crypto and started on this Bankless journey was like the word freedom. We keep returning to that. Right? Like freedom. Like we want to use crypto technology as an escape from all of the systems that try to control us, right? You know, like the banks or, you know, like the centralized tech companies. But somewhere along the road, like I found myself a slave to like prices. Okay.
Crypto prices?
Crypto prices, but just kind of the concept of like wealth. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, so this goes back to the goalpost moving. We've talked about crypto wealth so many different times on Bankless over the years. What I had never done before, never in my history, is actually defined what like enough was. Like, what's the number where like that's enough for everything I want to do in life? And my family like wants to do, and where I can provide for those that I love, and I don't have to look at the scoreboard anymore.
And maybe to emphasize, this is not coming from a place of greed or greediness. This is coming from a place of you love the game. You love the game of like growing a business and playing that particular game, investing in the right ways. Because what are you going to do with your life? It's a fun game. It's an enjoyable game. And you love the game.
Yeah. So I'm not the type of person like to do sort of the flashy status symbol thing of like, you know, buying the Lambo and whatever. Like, that's not.
Yeah. You bought a used Toyota Highlander like 4 years ago.
Yeah. And like, so that, but it wasn't that for me, but it was very much like the high score, like the arcade game of like, just like, it was just kind of this endless cycle of, you know, and crypto prices rise and fall. You never know, like, you know, something that starts at like one could turn into 100 and like, you just extrapolate that forward. Anyway, I'd not taken the time to actually define with those in my life, my spouse, like what is enough. Okay. So that was a big piece of it. The other piece I was missing was my, definition of wealth was way too narrow. It was like, when I thought about wealth, mostly I thought about like, net worth, right? Which is definitely a key part of wealth, but that's also the part that society it imposes on us. Like, we're sort of taught, like, what is success? It's net worth. It's kind of number go up. A key book for me was Sahil Bloom's book, which is kind of ironic because we actually had Sahil. I think he was like booked.
Yeah, we had him. We had him booked for just a podcast to be a podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Just talk about it. Yeah. Anyway, I received the book in the mail, you know, because he had sent that book as pre-reading material for the podcast. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Well, I'm not doing anything else. I may as well read this. It was fantastic.
It's called the right book at the right time.
Right book at the right time. It's called The Five Types of Wealth. And it just expanded my framework. So he talks about like, yeah, financial wealth is one type of wealth, but there's also like time wealth, relationship, social wealth, mental wealth, physical wealth. And I looked at that and I was like, oh my God, I'm completely over allocated in sort of the financial side of things. And I'm not like taking care of the other four types of wealth, right? Like, I was time poor. I was relationship light. I was like mentally scattered. I was physically like, I hadn't worked out in probably a couple of years, like at least not consistently. So I just felt physically like just soft. And I was just focusing on one type of wealth. I was missing all of the other types. You know, you see, he has just like questions about your relationship wealth and your social wealth. Like, who are the people that are going to be at the front row of your funeral, right? Are you investing in those relationships? And how are you investing? Are you dollar cost averaging into them? And so that was another key piece for me in sort of finding my new map, is creating a wealth plan that was more than just stacking, you know, Ether, Bitcoin, like crypto wealth, right? And that was broader. And it was using money, you know, Naval often says this, money is a tool, right? And so it's like using as money as a tool to also allocate to those other types of wealth. And so like I'm working out now. I'm like eating far more nutritiously. I'm like taking time for that. I'm investing in my relationships, both like my family, immediate family relationships, and then just like friendships that I'd sort of let atrophy. And I created a whole plan of around this. So it's like one thing to read the book, but like what was pivotal for me was creating like a dashboard, goals, habits, systems, you know, like feedback loops. You know how I work.
Right.
So just like grind it into a discipline.
Right. Yeah. You turned the other four types of wealth into processes for yourself.
Yeah.
Which Ryan loves process. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, it's, I feel like I just need reminders. Right. So this is like when you have processes and systems, when you drift, you can just get back on course. So that was the second thing. And the third thing, was I felt in everything I was doing, I was stretched too thin. Like, I was doing too many things. You know, when you have too many browser windows open and Chrome's like, that's too much. I'm eating all of your system resources, crash. You know, you just had too many browser windows, you know? And so I needed to, like, it was a result of saying yes to all of these things. Oh, that looks interesting. That look, I could do that. I could do that. I could do that. And what I needed to do was like correct the overachiever's delusion, which like for me was like three things. It was like, I'm the only one who could do this. That's what I thought. If I don't do it, it won't get done. And being busy is good. Those three things were like delusions, basically. I was feeding into myself. And it turned out and this really impressed upon me like 30 days in, everything was working still. I just peeked in. I had a meeting with you and Rachel on our team. Mm-hmm. I peeked in.
Our COO.
Yeah. I was looking at the podcast feed. All the episodes shipped. Thank you very much, David. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Podcast
a roll-up
kept going.
Was not missed.
And roll-up wasn't missed. We have still never miss a roll-up at Bankless.
Yeah, like ETH price wasn't great, but like
that's
the network
was
still great. It's out of our control. Like Bankless Ventures was backing deals. Like everything was happening. The team was kind of covering the gap. And so I look at the like what I used to believe and be like, because I thought subconsciously that if I left, I don't know, the world would burn. Like, I don't know what would happen.
Right, things would crumble.
Yeah. And this was hard evidence that showed me otherwise. So now I'm doing this thing where I'm just like operating on energy accounting, which is like if a task drains more than it pays, right? It's delegated, it's automated, or it's deleted. And I'm deleting a lot of things right now for my life. And I'm just focusing on core areas of competence, right? The zone of genius, as people call it. Storytelling. So that means doing this podcast with you, telling stories about the frontier of crypto, AI, something I've been rabbit holing recently, like all that stuff, and allocating capital. So that is the upgrade. So there was the reboot. The system was down, had some downtime. You know, just like Solana. Sorry. had some downtime. No, Solana's doing great. It's really great to see. I can't wait to talk to you more about that. And then also, I just upgraded the software. So that's what RSA2 is. Yeah, I don't know. I don't often share personal things, like, in general. Like, I'm pretty not that way. But I thought this might be helpful for some people, so that's why I published the article.
Yeah, no, and it's also just good to hear the story, and good to see that you have invested in the other side of your life. I was very happy to see that you followed through on not a single tweet for 9 months, and like the gray icon,
90 days.
Excuse me, and then also the gray icon next to your name, you know, on just gray for 90 days, and it was good.
I've always perceived that you've been way like better balanced than me. Is that like...
Yes. So you talked about how you said you now operate on energy accounting. If a task drains me more than it pays, it's delegated, automated, or deleted. I have operated on that. I think maybe as a not like an admiral quality of me, but just like if it drains me more than it pays, I ignore it, which is something I personally have to deal with, because like ignoring something is not always the best solution, but it has allowed me to be more sustainable. Like it's a little bit more innate in me of like, if this is not fun, then I am just not doing this, and I'm going to pivot into something that I do find fun, and I'm going to apply my energies that way. Now, again, like I said, that has cost me 2021 taxes, let me tell you. this has also made like just my being a little bit more sustainable naturally. I'm not saying it's the optimum strategy, but this is why I think stuff like this, like the Twitter mobbings, don't get me in the same way that they get you.
Yeah, I think you are much more bomb proof than me. It's like just more endurance runner type quality when you're that way. And I do think that that's the yin and the yang, you know. Sometimes you need a little bit of the grind and the over, like, what could we do? Like the overachieving. And sometimes you just need the, you know, like balance, you know, finding energy, actually like loving what you're doing and focusing on those things. So, that's good stuff. Now, you have had some thoughts, I think, about just like Bankless.
Yeah.
You know, I read your tweet earlier this week as I was logging back in about your thoughts on like what to really focus on. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, so maybe this comes down on the back of like your big realization. You said, you know, 30 days power down proved that, you know, the Bankless Media company would keep on shipping podcasts. Bankless Ventures would keep on going. And, you know, to be clear, the shoes of Ryan Sean Adams are very large, and there's no truly filling those shoes. But yet, you know, with the void that was left, that was created, you know, the mycelial network did fill that in. It, like, we learned to like route around the void, like that did get filled in. It's not perfect, but things did keep on going, and we learned to fill that gap. But also that, like, we also learned about how to, like, with that gap there was an opportunity for everyone to kind of like step up and put on the new hats that needed to be dawned on. And there's been, it's been generative, I would say, on the backside of the company. And especially me, because I'm the person who has had to fill that void the most. And it was also a moment for the company to ask, like, do we need to do this thing? Like, what are we doing that we actually might not need to do? Do we have to do things this way? And so downstream of that has been some choices. I put this out, this tweet, saying there are four things that we're going to do at Bankless. And this is like actually maybe just not completely relevant to what I was just saying of filling in the void, but, you know, choices that I think we ought to make moving forward. One, during your last 90 days, AI has just, you know, been as amazing as crypto was in 2021 in terms of hype and attention. And I am AI pilled. I think you have mentioned that you are AI pilled. We have a team member who is AI pilled, and then also Ajaz, who is crypto and AI pilled. And so we actually have found solid podcasting talent that is AI pilled. And we actually have a lot of podcasting talent that's AI pilled, and not just AI pilled, but frontier tech pilled. And we have been making more AI content, which I think many people have enjoyed. And some people have caused like elevated frustration that like, oh, my crypto podcast is now an AI podcast or a frontier tech podcast. And I understand that. So we are creating a new podcast, a frontier tech focused podcast that we are going to incubate. You're still going to see those podcast episodes on this feed, but we're also going to incubate this new podcast. We're calling it Limitless. Nice. So we have Bankless for crypto and markets, and then Limitless for frontier tech. And so we're going to spin up that podcast vertical. So you'll see that as well. All the frontier tech stuff is going to go over there. Also, the next thing, renewed Ethereum focus. And the reason why I think this again has nothing to do with your departure, and it actually has everything to do with Ethereum to me becoming interesting again, whereas the last 2 years of Ethereum have been off in a direction that hasn't felt aligned with what the universe wants or what the universe expects out of. Okay. And I see Ethereum in the last 6 months realigning itself to a new future. And, you know, Bankless has always had Ethereum in our DNA. There is no ripping Ethereum out of Bankless DNA. That just doesn't make sense. It's our first love. It always will be. And I think there's an opportunity now where Bankless can actually support Ethereum, because I don't think there wasn't supporting much to support about Ethereum in like 2023. It needed to realign yourself.
Reboot.
Ethereum yeah. also needed a reboot.
Figure out why. Yep.
And I think we are slowly watching Ethereum reboot in a way that I think we can support. And so now that opportunity exists once again, I think I want to take it. I think we should take it.
Love it.
Thumbnails. This seems small, but our thumbnails also need a reboot.
Oh yeah.
And thumbnails like seem like such a small thing. But people judge podcasters, YouTubers by what their thumbnails look like.
And more stupid open mouth face, like kind of YouTuber face.
We were always pushing against it, but the incentives pointed there. And so we're trying to figure out how to keep on optimizing for click-through rate, you know, which is what you do when you optimize for thumbnails, while also kind of like restoring legitimacy, which, you know, we once had, and like the podcast feed does have, but I want to go back into just optimizing for legitimacy. And I think this relates to what you are thinking about with like your energy level and how to not deplete your energy level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this means like we're going to optimize for what we feel is legitimacy and legitimate conversations and like things that we find interesting rather than like the dopamine of click-through rate. And then, of course, the last one is Ryan Tran Adams returns back this week. So that's all of those things.
I think that's really awesome. I think that the two most exciting technologies in my lifetime, aside from the internet, was just like growing up, whatever, crypto, 2010s into now, right? That's the story. And now AI, 2020s. And so I'd like to be exploring both of those frontiers is like a pretty rare opportunity. If you ever need a guest host on Limitless, okay?
You're like, interested?
I'm kind of, I dabble, okay?
Yeah,
I've been using, you know, the tools on a daily basis. Learning about transformers and just like the way all these systems are structured. That'll be really fun.
I think you will be, you've been listening to the Josh episodes on Frontier Tech and also the AI roll-ups with Ajaz and Josh. Ajaz and Josh, I'm very bullish on as podcasters.
Awesome.
And when I've stepped into that role with the AI roll-up, Josh, Ajaz, and David, it's actually, I just feel like the Jason Calcanis. And I say that in a negative way, because I'll leave that there. But Josh and Ajaz are very smart, and I am very bullish on them as podcasters. And I think you will definitely enjoy being a part of that conversation, because I walk away from those podcasts very bullish on AI and very interested in what happens next, which is how I felt about crypto in like 2019.
Well, Bankless listeners, thanks for indulging David and I in a little catch up, a little bit of housekeeping. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you. Oh, after the break, you're going to have to fade out to sponsors, David, because I don't even know who's sponsoring us anymore. But you got to update me on some of the big things that happened while I was out, because I have so many questions. So let's get to that.
Bankless Nation, we're going to get to the Trump meme coin, the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve, and the Libra debacle. But first, a message from some of these fantastic sponsors like Uniswap that make this show possible. Uniswap is your gateway to a more efficient DeFi experience. With Uniswap, swapping and bridging across 13 chains is simple, fast, and cost-effective, helping you move value wherever, whenever. Thanks to deep liquidity on the Uniswap protocol, you'll enjoy minimal price impact on every trade. And now Uniswap V4 takes it even further. Swappers benefit from gas savings on multi-hop swaps and ETH trading pairs, while liquidity providers can create new pools at 99% lower costs. The best part, you don't have to do anything extra. Each trade is automatically routed through Uniswap X, V2, V3, and V4, so you get the most efficient swap without even thinking about it. Whether you're swapping, sending, on-ramping, off-ramping, or bridging, Uniswap's web app and wallet gives you the tools to unlock DeFi's full potential on Ethereum, Base, Arbitrum, Unichain, and more. Use Uniswap's web app and wallet for a more efficient way to use DeFi. You may have already heard about Infinex. Infinex has, in my opinion, the nicest cross-chain swap and bridge feature that you will find anywhere. It is called Swidge, swap and bridge, and we're going to show you what it looks like. First, we're going to log into my Infinex account with a passkey. Now, there's no seed phrases in Infinex. This is just a one-click setup with biometric passkeys. But in addition to that, my Infinex account is fully non-custodial. So bam, I just logged in. It was two clicks and I'm already into my Infinex account. So let's go make a swidge. I'm going to go swidge my USDC that is on Base, and I'm going to buy Barrachain, which is a completely different chain. So we're going to swidge this. I'm going to press that button, and then Infinex is going to execute this order, this cross-chain order for me. And now it is done. But actually, I'm not really feeling bearish anymore. So I'm going to go from Barra to Penguins. I'm going to buy a Penguin on Solana. So I'm going from the Barrachain to Solana. See, no transaction signing, no gas to worry about. You just swidge across whatever chain that you want with Infinex. That was so easy. Go check out Infinex and try your first swidge today. In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and Rollups. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol, it's a digital nation, powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use frax.com/r/bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards. Before we get into the three subjects that I teased right before going into the break, Ryan, I just kind of want to talk about some numbers really quick.
Okay.
Since your departure on January 16th, your 90-day hiatus, ETH USD is down 48%. Ooh. From $3,400 to $1,750.
That's what I remember. I remember it was in the 3,000s.
$3,400. Yeah, well, okay. It's $1,750. Hopefully you weren't on margin when you left. Bitcoin USD is down 7% from $100,000 down to $93,000. Solana USD is down 30% from $210 down to $150. And the total crypto market cap is down from $3.6 trillion to $3 trillion. And interestingly, Bitcoin is down versus gold 25%.
Interesting.
Yeah, since your departure. What's your reaction? What's your reflections on these numbers?
I mean, honestly, it looks... Okay, so it looks most painful for ETH. It seems like Bitcoin's doing just fine.
Bitcoin's doing just fine.
As of right now. I mean, like, I know it was down. Like, I think I was looking at the charts. I think it was down, like, a lot more when the tariffs got announced, all of that stuff. Solana looks like it's doing pretty well as well. Mm-hmm. It seems like the sort of the bear market right now is Ether. I don't know about the other long tail of assets. I've looked at kind of like DeFi tokens and such that I hold. I don't think that they have had a resurgence, L2 as well. So it's like the entire Ethereum ecosystem is kind of, it's down fairly bad relative to Bitcoin and Sol. Like Bitcoin relative to gold is pretty interesting. Only down 25%. I mean,
down 25%. 25%. Gold moving 25%, I think, is a pretty big deal.
Gold is crushing, though, right? And it's all because of, another theme that seemed to have emerged while I was out, which is like the end of the dollar, the like end of Pax Americana. You know what I mean? Like the end of Bretton Woods. Is that seriously happening under Trump? Mm-hmm. It seems like it might be. At least it's the beginning of the end. And so I think like gold is kind of repricing that. That's the way it seems. Mm-hmm. And, so it's definitely been on a tear. Bitcoin seems like it's doing really well, though. Yeah. But it's ETH that's really suffering right now.
Mm-hmm. Bitcoin. So as you know, I did this Bitcoin versus Ethereum podcast before Bankless. It was called POV Crypto. It was me, the Ethereum guy, and a Bitcoiner co-host. And we were just debating. We just yell at each other. Since we were college friends, it was fun. A lot of what he said in the early days of that podcast in like the 2018 to 2019 era is coming true, where the brand and lead that Bitcoin has is actually large and more large than what like Bitcoin detractors say, and that eventually Bitcoin will be purchased by central banks. And we are not seeing Bitcoin being bought by our central bank, but I would say the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve is like pretty damn close to exactly what that like idea, that concept was, where the Bitcoin brand is so incredibly strong, and the Bitcoin story and the Immaculate Conception, which I like minimized back then. I was like, no, it's actually about like scale and productivity and revenue and innovation and software updates. That's actually the real thing.
Yeah.
I think Bitcoiners have like old school Bitcoiners that we would debate with back in 2018, 2019 had more foresight than I gave credit for back then.
Yeah. I think that I got a couple things I would say. I don't think it's over for Ether at all. I think right now it's losing the mid game.
Mm-hmm.
And your comments about it kind of like, I think I read a tweet from you where the Ethereum ship is kind of, it's taking a long time, but it is turning, the big ship to turn, and it is turning. Mm-hmm. I definitely see that. I know you've got an article coming out that you've been working on, right? About Ethereum and sort of the, like the shift and the signs of life that you're seeing, and like maybe call it a pivot in some ways, like this emphasis on the L2. I've been ruminating
the L1.
On the L1. The L1, excuse me. L1, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I've been ruminating on like another article about what I think the Ethereum community kind of got wrong and what it needs to do.
Interesting.
Particularly.
Okay. So actually what the Ethereum community needs to do is actually what I would say my article is about.
Okay, and I think you're probably talking about more the Ethereum network, which is important.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts on ETH the asset. Basically, the TLDR from my perspective is, holy shit, ETH just got totally outplayed by the Bitcoin religion. Uh-huh. It did not, like, Ethereum talks about building, right? It's like we're a community of builders. We build, that's what we do, right? That's our advantage. Okay, building on the technical side, but has not built the meme base layer, has not built the cult, has not built the religion. And we are seeing, and it's not something even the Ethereum culture would kind of acknowledge, right? It's like it doesn't do maximalism.
I don't think Ethereum culture
religion
has that DNA.
Well, that's a problem. And that's where you suffer if you're trying to become a global store of value asset. Anyway, I want to take that angle and kind of explore that a little bit. But
love it.
That's the other side of why Bitcoin's been super successful, because it's gotten to the level of central bankers. But in order to get there, dude, you needed this cult. Right. You needed people like Michael Saylor. You need people like Dave Bailey, who's like rubbing elbows with the politicians, getting to speak at conferences about this asset. Like, you have to work your way up to central bank. And Ethereum hasn't done that on the community side. Anyway, not to say it can't, because it's got all the raw ingredients there. And some, like many that we've argued, are like better attributes for a store of value than Bitcoin, but it has to really work on that side of things. So that's what I've been thinking about.
What's your take on the story of the Immaculate Conception of Bitcoin leading to its very strong credible neutrality, like the elimination of Satoshi, So Bitcoin has very strong credible neutrality in that context versus the mere existence of Vitalik Buterin and is like send like more send like the Ethereum Foundation. While Ethereum, we like Ethereum because it's credibly neutral compared to Bitcoin and compared to Bitcoin as a monetary asset, it doesn't have that same story. And so it disqualifies it from central bank inclusion. What's your take on that?
My take on that is just that it's a religious proposition and it's a fantastic religious proposition for Bitcoin. But there are different types of religions that you can form. And that doesn't have to be the only way a religion takes root. You know, it is one of the strengths of Bitcoin. But that does not preclude Ether from becoming a global like monetary asset. Now, it feels bad because it's like not winning that mid game right now. And even I was thinking compared to like 2021, 2022, I feel like ETH has fallen behind on the global store of value reserve asset like conversation narrative. Right. And like, I think that that ground needs to be regained if we're going to see material price appreciation in the future for ETH. And it's an open story. There's like some probability that happens and there's some probability that it doesn't. And I think part of what we're seeing is the market pricing that in.
So Ryan, you had your departure on January 16th. And if you had left 3 days later, on January 19th, the ratio between SOL ETH would actually have gone down by 10% because that was the day that Donald Trump launched his meme coin.
Oh.
And that was the day that Solana broke all-time highs. Sol USD broke all-time highs.
Yeah.
I mean, Sol ETH, the ratio of Sol Solana to ETH has been going up pretty consistently, in a pretty consistent trend since like December of 2023, which, I mean, it violently went up from 2023 into 2024. And then it's been consistently trending up versus Ethereum. And so the recent both dollar and ETH ratio terms has been marked at the top by the Donald Trump meme coin. You said that you didn't see the existence of the Donald Trump meme coin until 7 days later, and you know, congratulations for you know, being able to dodge that mess. So let me kind of guide you through some of the conversations that has been happening downstream of this. Of course, Donald Trump launches the meme coin. It's on Solana. All meme coins in that one moment of time on Solana had their liquidity sucked out from them, and I was trading meme coins on Solana at the time. I had like 4 or 5 or 6 meme coins. I dumped all of my meme coins for the Trump coin. All of them.
Did you buy Ivanka or just Trump?
I did not buy Ivanka.
Okay.
Melania. When the Melania,
Melania
meme coin.
Excuse me. Okay.
Yeah.
It was a Melania.
Yeah. How dare you invoke Ivanka's name into it? Yeah. When the Melania meme coin came out, that caused the Trump meme coin to dump. Because it was dilutive, right? Like Trump is the
too
meme.
Many tokens, not
too many
scarcity.
Tokens.
Scarcity. Yeah. I thought we did. Yeah, yeah. Got it. Not
apparently, like we're going to talk about the Libra debacle.
Yeah.
But apparently, the same guy that launched the Libra coin was involved with launching the Melania coin. We'll
okay. What?
Did you not know that?
No. And the Libra coin was
Javier Milei.
Javier
Milei. But in the back end, there was this one mastermind who was trying to like find the most clouded people possible, convince them to launch meme coins. And so he got a hold of Melania somehow, and then also got a hold of Javier Milei. But that's jumping forward in the story.
Okay.
When the Melania coin launched, the Trump meme coin lost like 40% of value, 30% of value, billions of dollars walked out. It was a completely like unforced error because everyone wanted to speculate on this Trump meme coin. Everyone was like holding a superposition of, oh my God, this is so bullish for Solana meme coins versus, oh no, this is a terrible grift. And we don't exactly know what's going to be. No one really knew what was real.
Yeah.
And then when the Melania meme coin got launched, the superposition collapsed and everyone was like, oh no, this is a grift. It's a grift.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? All right. So I know you're talking about this happening last quarter, but it's an ongoing story. So I was reading, even catching up this week. Uh-huh. Right now, the top 200, 250 holders, something like this, of the Trump token, they're now going to be invited to a private dinner with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. The most powerful man in the world, Donald Trump, president of the United States. Okay. You buy a meme coin to get access to the most powerful man in the world. Like, you're like, that's a political thing. That's like lobbying. That's like Trump's adding utility to his meme coin, right. David. Yeah. Isn't that what we always dreamed of?
It's Gary Vee. It was Gary Vee strategy.
Right.
Dinner with Gary Vee.
Okay. So my question to you is like, how is this perceived when it happened and now? Like, is this a good thing for crypto? Because The other thing I was catching up on is like all of our wildest dreams on the regulatory front are coming true. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the twisted world we lived in 2 years ago where Gary Gensler was God King and he was coming mm-hmm. with this, you know, Thor yep. hammer to smash uh-huh. everything in crypto and the whole administration was backing him. Mm-hmm. And we had like FDIC, we had Operation Choke, right. the whole, you know, apparatus of the government was going after crypto aggressively. Mm-hmm. Now, all of that's reversed. They're all friendly. Mm-hmm. We're going to get stablecoin mm-hmm. legislation. Mm-hmm. I was watching a clip from Mark Ueda, who's mm-hmm. A commissioner of the SEC and catching up with, you know, like on Hester Peirce stuff. He basically said, hey, you know, the Gensler regime, that's all gone. Now we're super crypto favorable and we're doing all of these things to support the industry. It's like Trump literally fulfilled his promise on that front, right? Mm-hmm. Like the regulatory winds have completely shifted in crypto's favor. The Treasury Secretary, Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, he's doing mm-hmm. stuff with Tether. Now it feels to me, David, like we no longer are at risk from the government of being squashed. We're at risk from the government of being corrupted. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so like we've yeah. moved to a different vector yeah. of...
The pendulum has swung.
Yes. And so yeah. the Trump coin itself, like, is this viewed as like, oh, this is what true adoption looks like, the president doing uh-huh. this? Or is it viewed as, oh, God, another vector for corruption and this like long term will not go well?
It was initially considered the former and it is lately considered the latter. And this was what Vitalik Buterin tweeted out pretty quickly after the launch of the Trump meme coin. He tweeted out this tweet that said the risk of politician coins comes from the fact that they are such a perfect bribery vehicle. If a politician issues a coin, you do not need to even send them any coins to give them money. Instead, you just buy and hold the coin, and this increases the value of their holdings passively. And then, of course, Donald Trump announces that the top 200 holders gets to have dinner with Donald Trump, which means like if you hold enough of the market cap of Donald Trump, you just get to whisper in his ear directly in this dinner.
Well, how's the Trump token doing on that news? Responding to market catalysts?
It pumped like 60% with the announcement of that. Yeah, so here's the chart. Here it was down 89, it was down 90% over 92 days. And then, so there was a 3-month lockup. So the Trump team, which owned 80% of the supply of the token, had a 3-month lockup. We are now 92 days into the issuance of the Trump coin. So the unlock happened 3 days ago. And now just recently it pumps up 70-80% just 2 days after vesting unlocks.
So is someone going to come up with like some analyst group going to come up with like the thesis for Trump coin, which is like all the lobbyists in Washington, D.C. will have to bid on this thing in order to get, you know, like influence to curry favor with Trump. Not only all the lobbyists and corporations and such, but other countries. Like you could create a bull case for Trump token
yeah.
based on its kind of like naked influence with the president of the United mm-hmm. States. Mm-hmm. Like, by the way, societally, that sounds like a complete disaster to me, like mm-hmm. Further corruption of our political system. But I guess it's not like illegal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Where do you think where do you think this leads? It's not great.
To fill you in on what the crypto community has been doing in response to this, like to go back to what you're saying about like Gary Gensler's out and, you know, now it's crime season again.
Yeah, crime season.
That's the meme in crypto. But people are like actually posting like somewhat satirical, but somewhat yeah. serious tweets of like Gary Gensler and being like, I missed this man. I miss Gary Gensler.
Did you see? I think I saw this in passing uh-huh. again. I'm not up to speed yet. But Richard Hart, the case against Richard Hart, the SEC case, was dropped. That happened this week?
I haven't tapped into the details of that. I've been waiting for someone to synthesize that.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, yeah. So that's happening. What else?
Okay, so the other one is the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. And so Donald Trump signed an executive order to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve.
Wow.
Around this time, there was a ton of just jostling positioning by companies, foundations, corporations to become Trump aligned. And so like Ripple, Brad Garlinghouse started what's it called? Like proximity posting. And so everyone started posting like United States, pro USA, 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 like tweets on Twitter. Brad Garlinghouse was talking about how great Trump was. Solana released this marketing video that was just like regurgitating the cultural shift from the left to the right about, like, the line was in the video, "I don't want to invent genders. I want to, like, innovate on ideas," or something.
Okay. All right,
and
all right.
The crypto community just rejected it because it was so cringe. They did, and the Solana
it's
account
not well executed.
It was too cringe. It was too cringe. They ended up deleting the video, but there was a bunch of like jostling.
Did Anatoly apologize? Did he have?
He
to?
Did. He did. Oh, and okay. people accepted his response. It was a good response. It was a good response. So yeah, there was just like jostling, like, of everyone trying to become aligned with being pro United States, because everyone wanted to be in the strategic reserve because we didn't know what would constitute being in the strategic reserve. And then Donald Trump on Truth Social.
You're saying that there was actually other assets that were like contemplated for this, like
so Donald Trump tweeted out on Truth Social about the existence of a strategic reserve.
Yeah.
And he tweeted out how it's going to be things like Ripple, Cardano.
Why?
Solana.
Why those?
I think no one knew. No one knew. And then I think one
made
more.
In the US? Is that?
Yes, I think it was like US coins. But it was also just coins that had, like, I think successfully jostled their way into position to get the pro tweet from Trump.
Totally.
Then also there was somebody taking like a margin long position on something, like I can't remember what it was. One of the shit coins, like XRP, hours before that Truth Social post.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, but the story of the reserve is that it's just a Bitcoin reserve.
A Bitcoin reserve. There's also something else that I can't remember what it's called, but like, oh yeah, digital asset stockpile, which is just the assets that the United States already has, and that includes like Tether, Ether, and
they have a lot of Ether still, right?
They have a decent amount of Ether. And Bitcoin in the strategic Bitcoin reserve cannot be sold. That is what the Bitcoin reserve is. In the digital asset stockpile, there is discretion, and there's somebody going to be in charge of like a long-term plan for the treasury. So they're treating the digital asset stockpile as a treasury that someone's going to sell and make strategic decisions on. But the Bitcoin strategic reserve is not going to be sold, and that's the whole point.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, this kind of stuff is why Bitcoin is so strong right now, right? It's like, you were talking about other assets like jostling for kind of power. Like, you could argue that Bitcoin did that too. The community did that in a decentralized way and actually
and
like
they started
won.
10 years ago.
And they started 10 years ago and they won. Yeah. You know, remember that David Bailey having Trump at the Bitcoin conference, right?
Yeah.
It's like that whole thing, that grassroots effort to swayed the Republican Party that Bitcoin was the asset. Right. I mean, that's part of their religious victory here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The reason why it has the Bitcoin strategic reserve and everything else has either nothing or a digital asset stockpile is like the Cardano, Ripple, Solana tried to jostle for position in a top-down way, like leadership made decisions to try and get, you know, close to Trump.
Yeah.
And the best that they could do was getting in the stockpile. But Bitcoin, being a bottom-up movement, won itself as a strategic reserve because it's bottom-up, it's grassroots. And
it gave them votes
and money. And then also there's Ethereum, which is just like opting out of this whole entire thing.
We're too good for that.
We're too good for that. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Uh-huh. That's what's happening. All right, what else? Okay. What's it? Libra, you said?
The Libra meme coin. Okay, so this ended the meta of the meme coin meta. This was the blow off top of the meme coin meta.
Ended it permanently for everything? Like all
not
meme
permanently
coins
because they're still meme coins, but I think meme coins will never be as big as they were leading up to that point. I think the Donald Trump meme coin, what it was the top of Solana USD, it was the top of meme coin volumes, then the launch of Libra was like the jumping of the shark.
So this was like 2017 Katy Perry with her like nails with all of the crypto assets on her nails. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
That's right. Okay, so February 14th. This erupted after the Argentine president, Javier Milei, launched a meme coin called Libra with a Solana contract. This isn't all in Spanish. He has since deleted the tweet. And that launched off this frenzy. And I remember where I was. I was at dinner with a friend, and I got my tweet. Twitter blew up. And I was like, oh my God, Javier Milei just launched a meme coin. And this was like after I had been down in Argentina for a month at this like crypto grassroots, just like pop-up city.
Yeah, basically we the trying... theme for that, it's like Argentina really gets it. I mean, it's
Argentina
about banking
crypto,
on bank.
Argentine crypto,
yeah,
exactly.
I got it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Javier Milei just never came. And I think it was because our reputation as an industry is pretty bad. And apparently he's also
this helps. This helps, I'm sure.
Right? and so it hits $4.5 billion market cap.
What?
Like 45 minutes after launch, okay. It hits $4.5 sure. billion. Dollars.
And he's just running the Trump play. This is the Trump play. It's a Trump token.
So I think Javier Milei had very low context about what was happening. He got used. He did not know exactly what he was doing. He was getting directions from people like pulling the strings, puppeteering him. At the peak of a $4.5 billion market cap, this guy who orchestrated this, Hayden Davis, and many other insiders cashed out hundreds of millions of dollars. And the price went from $4.5 billion down to less than $1 billion inside of 2 hours, which is insanely rapid price movements. Like $4.5 billion got created and then $3 billion got destroyed inside of 2 hours. Kind of nuts. And this, you know, international uproar, there was an attempt to impeach Javier Milei in Argentina that didn't go through because Javier Milei's party controls like what is equivalently the House and Senate. Like he's in control, so he's not getting impeached. He's fine. But it was very embarrassing. And if there's one thing as a politician in Argentina, you do not do, you can be corrupt as a politician in Argentina. You cannot be embarrassed as a politician in Argentina. That's the culture down
That's
there.
That's cultural, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And this was embarrassing.
This was incredibly embarrassing for
him. Did he have to
him.
Apologize? What did he do?
He deleted his tweets. He said that he said that there were people inside that corrupted him, and he's going to like oust the rats that got into his, like, you know, in his like sphere. There's this guy, Hayden Davis. Do I have a picture of him? I need to show you a picture of him. Did you ever see Hayden Davis, the picture of this guy?
Who is this?
Oh my God. He's the guy that orchestrated this. This guy.
Chief villain? This guy? This is a mastermind?
This is the mastermind.
All right.
Yeah.
He looks pretty young.
Yeah. He's in
How
his
did
little...
he do this? How did he get in with, like, you know, world leaders?
I lost the picture. So apparently he found a way to, he found Javier Milei's sister. And was texting his sister.
Well, that's scrappy.
Yes, it was. It was very scrappy. It was very scrappy. I can't get a picture to load, but you can kind of see it. Here we go.
All right.
He texted his sister, and this sister was the way that Hayden Davis got his way into convincing Javier Milei to launch a meme coin. And this is what this guy does. He realizes that he can find people with clout. He can convince them to launch a meme coin, and then he can extract the meme coin because he knows the game better than anyone. Except this one last thing happened, Ryan, where this Meteora, which is kind of like maybe it's like a Uniswap or Balancer or like liquidity on liquidity launching pool on Solana. Ben Chao is the name. This came downstream of Jupiter. A Meteora, which again, the liquidity pool on Solana, was working with Hayden Davis to launch these meme coins, but Ben Chao was the one guy who could MEV Hayden Davis. So Hayden Davis was trying to snipe the supply, and he was working with Ben Chao, who owns and operates the infrastructure, and Ben Chao was like, oh, I'm going to snipe the sniper, which is what he did. Ben Chao realized, and people in the Meteora community realized that this had been going on, that Meteora, Hayden Davis, and like many other people had created this influencer meme coin infrastructure complex, like industrial complex, where they would find influencers, they would pump up meme coins, and then people earlier and earlier in the stack would snipe the supply and eat and, you know, like max extract. And this, with the launch of the Libra token, was everyone realizing that this meme coin influencer infrastructure industrial complex existed. And that's why the game was up, because everyone saw how exactly corrupt it was. It was not fair at all. And it all collapsed down to the person who was able to snipe the supply quickest and earliest in the stack.
I can't help but wonder if, like, the things that are going on today will cause a backlash among the neutral kind of observer, the kind of the hearts and minds that, like, we have been trying to get on the crypto train, right? Which is like, now you have major politicians rolling out these meme coins that seem to be perfect surface area for vectors of corruption, right?
Yeah.
And the good news about this whole story is all the regulatory winds are blowing in our favor, and maybe we can use that to actually build things that are useful for the world, like a non-sovereign store of value and like stable coins, everything, and all of the like the good things, the pure things. But I can't help but wonder if this is like just going to be super bad for our reputation long term, and that there's going to be a backlash and some hell to pay at some point in time.
This was my, and I think our concern about the whole political season and the 3 months leading up to the election, where you and I were resistant to the idea of throwing unanimous support behind one single party, the Republican Party, because we want crypto to be neutral.
Yeah.
We would like to hedge our bets. We don't want it to just only be partisan. I think that is what's happening here downstream of that is vindicative of that position. I know you and I both listened to and respect Sam Harris. I have listened to Sam Harris mention the corruptibility of the Donald Trump meme coin 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
It's focused. Yeah. I think I'll go as so far to say that the current brand of crypto right now is worse than it was post FTX collapse.
Really? You think it's that bad? Among a certain subset, like neutral third parties?
Among public non-crypto sentiment, like outsider sentiment of crypto.
Do you know what
crypto?
One way I judge this is like, how embarrassed are you to tell people that like you love crypto or you work in crypto or something like that at like a cocktail party among like normie people?
Yeah.
And
I have
is
for
that
the first
higher?
Time called, I have for in that context.
I
again,
work
like,
in media.
I said I run a Frontier Tech podcast.
So that's and where I, we are right now.
This is previously like post FTX. Yeah. I was still beating my chest about like crypto.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, FTX is
freedom
exactly
tech
why.
For the world. Right?
Freedom tech for the world. The FTX is an example why we need crypto, actually, not that crypto is bad. And all now right. for the post of all of that, I was like, no, I do Frontier Tech.
Okay. So good news is huge regulatory progress. Everything we could have wished that is actually happening. And that counts for something. Bad news is we may have chipped away some of our soul. And I wonder if the trade-off's worth it.
Yeah, I wonder.
I think it might be still, but I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
This is the frontier, you know. I'm glad you're with us. This is the journey.
All right, just last thing. You got to catch me up on the news of the week, but I think we got to break for sponsors first, yeah?
Okay, yep, that's right. News of the week, Content Coins, Jesse Pollack, Base, Zora. You like Zora, so I want to actually get your take on Zora before you left, because you were a Zora bull, and I want to get your take about like what you thought about Zora, because I will update you about what Zora has transformed into as of recently, and then it's all about the Ethereum pivot, and then we're also going to talk about Bitcoin as well. So we're going to talk about those subjects, but first, a message from some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Imagine verifying yourself without handing over personal data. No hacked databases, no unnecessary personal exposure for airdrops, and no AI bots ruining community governance. Meet Self, the on-chain identity verification protocol built for privacy and control. Self protocol uses zero-knowledge proofs to confirm your identity safely. Users prove key details like age or citizenship without revealing sensitive personal information. Self never stores your data. It only generates cryptographic proofs. Here's how it works in 3 steps. First, register and verify. Use the Self app to scan your biometric passport's RFID chip. Self verifies authenticity with zero knowledge proofs. Each passport creates one unique identity. Second, you can share proofs privately. Third-party apps request identity proofs, like confirming you're over 18. You can also link proofs securely to public wallets for airdrops or governance participation. And then last, secure verification. Apps validate your proofs instantly on-chain, like on Celo, or off-chain. Audited by ZK Security, the Self app is live on iOS and Play Store. Visit self.xyz and follow Self Protocol on X. Imagine a world where your day-to-day banking runs on a blockchain. That's exactly what Mantle is building, powered by a $4 billion treasury and poised to become the largest sustainable on-chain financial hub. As part of their 2025 expansion, Mantle is introducing 3 new core innovation pillars that bridge traditional finance with decentralized technology. First is their enhanced index fund, aiming for $1 billion in AUM by Q1. It provides optimized exposure to Bitcoin, ETH, Solana, and USC, complete with built-in yield opportunities. Next, Mantle Banking promises to revolutionize global value transfer through seamless blockchain-powered banking services, bridging crypto into your daily life. Finally, Mantle X blends AI with DeFi to deliver an intelligent, user-friendly experience for everyone. And the best part is that this is all in addition to their already launched products like Mantle Network, METH, and FBTC. Ready to step into the future of finance? Follow Mantle on X at Mantle_official and join the on-chain revolution today. Ryan, let me tell you about Content Coins.
Okay.
So Content Coins are what Jesse Pollack and Jacob from Zora are talking about when they say you can take a bit of content, you can take a 10-minute short, like long clip, you can take a JPEG, and you can make an ERC-20 token out of it. And generally, you would do this on Zora. And this, to you, might sound like a meme coin. And I would say that it structurally is the meme coin, and Jesse's advocating for it's not like different from a meme coin, but it's where it does differ is the culture and the intent around these things. And so it's where a meme coin is, you know, meant to have a super high market cap. Content coins are really just meant to be traded more than have a high market cap.
And they're for creators, right?
They're for creators. Yeah, yeah. They're not
kind
for
of the TikTok crowd or like exactly. Whatever the influence. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so the idea here, this is a friend of mine that, who you know as well. He posts on Instagram and he has an Instagram account that has 120,000 followers, and he makes clips that have like hundreds of thousands of views. And so he tweeted out, for 3 million views last month, Instagram paid me $3. In the 12 hours since Jacob and Jesse showed my Zora post some love, I have earned 28 in rewards. Not dusting off the yacht catalog, but it's not hard to see the vision. Very cool. And feeling thankful, Zora isn't just for crypto. So the idea here, and I would also say it's very important to open up the Zora mobile app and scroll through it because it looks and feels like Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, I have.
But there
it's
is
great.
A market cap associated with a post. Yep. And the idea here is like, you know, meme coins on Pump Fun look like 4chan and are optimizing for traders and meme coin speculators, and that's great. And then Zora is optimizing for creators, and it's not trying to have like a $500 million banger. It's much more optimizing for like quantity and creators to do like what early Instagram was doing and TikTok, and just allowing people to speculate on whatever the rise of the attention, the virality of the post, which isn't too different from meme coins. But they're trying to make a cultural distinction between content coins and meme coins. What do you think about that?
Well, so let me ask you, what's the reaction been to this?
Very negative.
Is that crypto Twitter? Is that all
crypto
circles?
Twitter.
Is
crypto
that
Twitter.
Different?
Yeah.
Which tribes are saying what? You know, Bitcoiners hate it all, but like
Bitcoiners hate it all.
I imagine
yes,
a lot of people hate it because it's like Ethereum ecosystem based, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then some of the like more purity focused people are like, why is Jesse doing this? Why is Coinbase doing this? It's a meme coin. You shouldn't like pump meme coin prices. Is that kind of the reaction?
Yeah, I would say that's a reaction. Yeah, Solana people are looking over at the Ethereum camp and they are saying that this is Ethereum doing what it's best at, which is taking stuff that is like Solana figured out and making it highbrow and like putting it in an ivory tower. It's like these are like just highbrow meme coins.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like it's meme coins at the end of the day, and the Ethereum community has been shitting on meme coins for years, but now they've made their version of meme coins and they're highbrow and they're holier than thou.
And now meme coins are good, you're rebranding it to content coins, and you're just like doing the same thing.
Yeah, so that's the Solana take. I would say more than half of the Ethereum community is not bought in on content coins. It is specifically like the Jesse or Zora base culturalists, I would say, that are convinced by content coins.
So here's what I don't understand. What's wrong with the experiment? It doesn't have to be your thing. I mean, mm-hmm. there's tons of things that haven't been my thing in crypto. I mean, mm-hmm. NFTs was never really my thing, but I respected that it was, you know, for some people. Mm-hmm. Like what's the harm? What's the downside in doing this experiment? I guess the good side from what I see, the Zora, first of all, which I know we've known Jacob, founder mm-hmm. of Zora from like the very early days, right? Mm-hmm. I should disclose. I've also, you know, previously been I'm an investor in Zora and have been since the early days as well. So maybe that colors my bias, but I'm trying to be super unbiased here and just say like Jacob has been trying things mm-hmm. in this creator economy, ownership economy vision for the last like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. He quit Coinbase to do this. Mm-hmm. And I've watched him kind of like pivot to try different things. Does this work? Does this work? Does this mm-hmm. work? Continuing to build and pivot. And he's stayed true to the original vision, which he actually thinks every single bit of content on the internet is mintable. He sees mm-hmm. minting as a verb. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I've watched him try different experiments on this, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes so much time in crypto because it's taken up to now to get an actual user interface that's like comparable to something like TikTok. Mm-hmm. And that's like, because he's been doing it the sort of the right way, you know, with like L2s and making mm-hmm. sure that all of the creators have like full ownership of the actual assets, not taking shortcuts. Anyway, this is the most recent pivot of that same vision. But it's been the same experiment that he's been playing, like trying at since day one. Why not give this a shot? Like, what's the downside? I mean, if you don't want the piece of content, like don't buy any content. When I see the app, I see, oh, cool. It doesn't even feel like crypto. It feels like a mature app mm-hmm. to me. love that they're using L2s, they're using Base. It's all quick, fast transaction times. They're actually, for the ETH heads out there, they're actually pricing everything in the unit of account for of Ether, which is great for your ETH like bags if you're like an ETH is money type of advocate. Anyway, I see a lot to like about this project, and sometimes I just feel like the tribes are a little bit too quick to shoot something down. But again, I'm just getting like up to speed. I don't know, like, you know, what's, was there like a scam here? Was there some impropriety here?
The critique of Zora and the Content Coins meta is that it has been very top down pushed by Jesse. And Jesse, I trust Jesse. When Jesse says something, I believe him. But the critique is that, like, it's in addition to that, Coinbase Ventures invested in Zora. Zora deployed the Zora app on Base, and they also have the Zora chain, which is like aligning, you know, Jesse, Base, and Coinbase Ventures to pump Zora and Content Coins, because that's the Base cabal. And then Jesse says he did not know this. I heard through the apparently he said that on Twitter somewhere, but 3, 4, or 5 days after Jesse really started pumping Zora, Zora, the token, is launched. And so this token got launched yesterday. And inside of that token, it was announced that this token is for fun. It is a fun token. It is a meme coin.
Yeah.
And it's also being given to investors pro rata their investment into Zora, but it's for fun. And that is setting people off the wrong way. And I had a good conversation with Dan from Blockworks on Twitter here. So maybe I'll just kind of run through that. Dan says, there's a very real reason to be disappointed about a for fun token with a short investing schedule in 2025. He says that there are United States-based development companies that have launched tokens and have DAOs actively discussing doing distributions to tokens inside of the, you know, like, meta context of Donald Trump and his administration. I was pushing back and I was saying that, you know, yeah, the SEC still hasn't, you know, delivered regulatory clarity. There's no market structure bill passed. We have a new admin, but no actual new regulation has been passed. So they could still be using that this is a meme coin as cover, as regulatory cover. Mm-hmm. And he's just declining that and saying, like, that is not actually, the meta has shifted. Development companies are issuing tokens that aren't like that. And so that doesn't really hold weight. And so people are frustrated about the launch of the meme coin downstream of, you know, Coinbase Ventures investing, Jesse doing this top-down pivot, this top-down push of Content Coins and Zora, and then the Zora token just happens to go live. So people are throwing flags at that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like Jesse and Coinbase are kind of like, you know, they can make money in other ways. They've already like shown that they are long-term players. I think what Jesse's probably looking at the end of the day is like Base. More content, more growth, more users, more activity, more things to do on Base. I think that if I had to guess, that's where his true motivation lies. It's less about like the Zora token itself. I guess like the other piece of it, when you just look at Zora itself, it feels like sometimes in crypto, we produce too many assets, like too many tokens, right? Mm-hmm. It probably makes sense for Zora to, if it even has a token, there's probably an argument for like, why do you have a token, right? Like, why even have a token in the first place? Right. But if it has a token, maybe it's just a fun utility token. Because when I look at Zora, the app itself, I'm like, this is an app that doesn't need a token, right? The money is ETH. Mm-hmm. You don't need a utility token there. You're not staking. It's doing everything on Base. So you don't need a token to secure. There's no like work token, right? Mm-hmm. To put a token in there is like pointless. I mean, so maybe all you're left with is either no token or a fun token. And then maybe the argument is like, then why do the meme coin? Why do the fun token? But like, it's a meme coin platform. I don't know.
Why can't investors be happy with owning equity in Zora? Like, they can make money off of fees and revenue. Why are we unhappy with equity?
And I would say that is probably where the true value accrues if Zora takes off and is successful. It's probably just like any other startup with an app. It's like equity in an actual like quote unquote security. But
understanding that, I understand why Twitter is pushing back. Like the majority of Twitter, 85-90% is rejecting the Zora token because they think it is just a a way to just dump the token on just, it was just exit liquidity, like all the other reasons why, like all the same reasons why people reject tokens in the first place. Now I put out this one tweet where somebody was basically alluding to that fact, and you know, like the rejecting the token, this is the Zora token is worth the zero, don't buy it, blah blah blah. And I tweeted out like this frustration that I have with crypto Twitter, which is that there's this meta of if it's not your bag, destroy it.
I agree, it's
insufferable, and it's very it's toxic and it's frustrating. But since putting out this tweet, I have since appreciated the idea that Anatoly replied here, saying survival of the fittest. And what I think he means by that is, yeah, the crypto Twitter meta is so toxic and destructive of other people's bags. If the meta doesn't agree in the validity of the existence of the token, people will FUD your bags. And I do think that it is this very fast rat race, the queen's race, where like if you aren't swimming faster than everyone, you're going to get eaten. Yeah. And if that is the meta that tokens must find their existence in, you need to be the best token possible, or else you're going to get just chewed up and spit out and people are going to reject you.
Yeah, you'll be part of the 99.9% of all tokens that are heading directionally to zero, relative to the dollar, relative to Bitcoin or ETH.
Yeah. And so I do think there is this like white blood cell process that's happening on Twitter where people are rejecting low quality tokens and telling token issuers to, you know, hold yourself to a higher standard with creating a token.
And that's totally fine. You know, what the normal response to that would be is just don't buy it then. Yeah, all you have to do is just not buy it. Yeah. What kind of is a little bit annoying is when you have builders who have proven themselves kind of long-term oriented, not pump and dumpers, like Jesse and Jacob from Zora, how all of their motives are in question, how they're like put in the same group as that guy's name, was named Hayden Davis, who is doing the Javier, like the politician meme coins. I don't think that based on their reputation, they should just be put in that camp, right? They're clearly doing something different, much more long term.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also say this whole survival of the fittest is partially contributed to your burnout.
Yeah.
Because that is a terrible milieu to be a part of for 5 years straight on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, it's all the turtles die, you know, turtles on a beach. They have tons of turtles and they all die. They get picked off by seagulls before they go to the ocean. Like you're watching that carnage play out and it's emotionally scarring, I guess.
It's
so you just zoom out. Just zoom out is one thing I've learned. What else we got?
There's two more topics to talk about. The Ethereum strategic pivot, which is underfoot. This episode I put out with Donkrad and Ansgar with my help of Mike Ippolito to discuss what changes are happening at the core of Ethereum. And my takeaway from this episode is that, you know, the Ethereum pivot has been ongoing and happening for the last like 6 months. I think we could talk about this for like honestly an hour, and I also think we're going to do more episodes on this, so I don't necessarily think we need to hash it out here, but like I kind of alluded to in the beginning, I'm pretty stoked about what's happening.
That's more the L1 is just like asserting some strength relative to L2s. Like
we are reprioritizing the layer one. You know when you're you're in a plane and the oxygen mask dropped down and you're supposed to put it on first.
Yeah.
The L1 is putting itself first. And I think that's great.
Yeah, that's been interesting. The other thing that was really been happening over the last couple of weeks as the crypto market has started to repair is it looks like Bitcoin is starting to decouple from all of the risk on assets, all the equities, all of the fangs, everything, you know, inside your stock portfolio. It's acting a bit more like gold and that is starting to happen. Which is very interesting because I think this gold trade is going to, the non-sovereign store of value trade, right? The US dollar post Bretton Woods kind of era trade is just heating up. We're seeing that in the price of gold, and Bitcoin is just catching a bid because it's got that narrative of like new digital gold. So watching that will be obviously very good for crypto and Bitcoin as a store of value.
I think the Ethereum pivot and Bitcoin's elevation to a non-sovereign store of value is like the two most interesting stories in crypto right now.
Well, we're going to talk about all of those things, I imagine, David, in the weeks and months to come. So why don't I just take us out? You guys know crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.